Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. According to 2025 data from the Massachusetts Department of Families and Children, at any given time, roughly 130 to 140 children connected to the Southern Cape Cod DCF office are living in out-of-home placements. Approximately a third of those children are placed with other relatives, while a third are in foster placements. The remainder are in residential schools, treatment centers, or emergency residences. There's always a need for more foster families, especially in the Cape and Islands region. Today, we'll talk about what it entails to become certified as a foster parent and the joys and challenges of fostering children. Joining us in studio, Allie Garocci. She's Executive Director of Cape Cod Foster Closet and a previous kinship foster parent. Hi, Allie.
Hi, Mindy.
Beverly Costa-Ciavola is from the Cape Cod Neighborhood Support Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just want to mention that we did invite Department of Families and Children, or DCF, to join the show, but they declined our invitation. Allie, tell us a little bit more about Cape Cod Foster Closet.
Cape Cod Foster Closet was founded 5 years ago by Sharon and Andy Palmer, their East Ham residents, who were foster parents for around 7 years, and realized that they wanted to do more than support just the one or two children who were in their home for a period of time. And the easiest and most impactful way that they saw that they could make an immediate difference was by founding a foster closet. So we provide clothing, material goods, and other seasonal items to children in foster or kinship care all around the Cape and the Islands, and to some families off Cape when they can reach us.
All right, Beverly, what's the mission of the Cape Cod Neighborhood Support Coalition?
Yeah, so our mission is to support families to prevent child abuse and neglect. And we do that in a variety of different ways. But one of them is to support foster families, and particularly kinship families, grandparents raising their grandchildren.
All right, talk about kinship families. So this would be children who are in the foster care system that are related to kids, or are these maybe cases that don't even go into the DCF?
They're both.
Both, okay.
They're really both. Some of the grandparents get their grandchildren through the courts. But I also have some grandparents that it's a very informal relationship with their adult child. So they haven't gone through the court. The DCF isn't involved, but the adult child has left the grandchild with them. Mm-hmm. And comes back and forth into their life sometimes. And then others are living with the adult children and really feel like they're the ones that are raising that grandchild.
Yeah. It's really hard to get a handle on the numbers, right? Because we have, you know, the number, like these sort of situations where you're not going through the court, you're not going through DCF. So what is your guess, Bev? What do you think as far as grandparents raising grandchildren on the Cape? What's the number you think?
So we have census data from 2024 that tells us it's a little bit over 500. But I would estimate it's probably closer to 800.
Wow.
Because, again, some of that is informal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those statistics just reflect what DCF is telling them, that they have, you know, that have gone through fostering. Mm-hmm. Because when you go for custody at the courthouse, you become a guardian. You don't foster first.
Right.
So
yeah. And as mentioned, I'm one of those grandparents, as you
yes,
know,
you are.
I'm one of those grandparents raising kids. And I went through the court system as well. We're waiting on a third guest who we think is stuck in traffic. We're not sure. So I'm not sure if you guys can answer this, but we'll do our best here. The Southern Cape office receives roughly 500 to 600 reports of abuse or neglect per quarter, with about 175 to 250 formal investigations or responses. Describe what some of the red flags or instances that would result in DCF being contacted?
So there are mandated reporters who are people who are interacting with children in our community. They could be pediatricians, teachers, therapists, daycare providers. And these are folks who are required to report to the state when they have concerns that a child may be experiencing abuse or neglect. That's their role, is to make a report. Mm-hmm. And then that report goes to the Department of Children and Families and gets screened, and they decide sort of what the next steps and actions are. I think common reasons for reporting that I have heard about or, you know, experienced in my role working with families include substance use, mental health concerns, child sexual abuse.
Well, it runs the gamut. Yeah.
And sometimes it's the adult children, the parents of that child are deceased, mm-hmm. Which was my case, and my parents brought up my nephew from the time he was 11. He's going to be 42. But they got him because my sister passed away unexpectedly. Yeah. And then his dad passed away a year later. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they get them that way.
Right. And if DCF determines a child needs to be removed from a home, what are the next steps for that child?
Well, that can be complicated.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah,
I guess, right?
it really does. They luckily nowadays they do try to find kinship. Mm-hmm. That wasn't always the case. You know, the thought used to be the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Mm-hmm. So why would you put them with a grandparent or a grandchild, an aunt or an uncle? Right. So, but. Typically, they will in the kinship world. They would be contacted and agree to take that child in, and sometimes it's the grandparent themselves who have called DCF mm-hmm. Because they have experienced whatever's going on with their adult child, and so they will get that child for a period of time fostering. And then DCF usually will close the case once they see that the child is safe and cared for, and then they don't have any more.
One thing we probably should clarify here, though, in the foster care system, the idea is you want to reconcile. You want to, when possible, right?
Right.
So the idea is when you're taking in a foster child, it's not because you want to adopt them. It's you want to give them a stable place to be while working out whatever, you know, relationship they have with their parents. Is that right?
That's right. By and large, the goal is reunification when a child is removed from their biological parents' home. Yeah. So the department is working towards reunifying, and the foster parent's role is really to provide love, care, safety, and support in this, you know, transitional time while it's determined if biological parents are able to take the kids back into their home. And I think, you know, to sort of add on to what Bev was saying, sometimes she's absolutely right. From my understanding, the department is looking for kin first. Sometimes mm-hmm. that takes a little while. Mm-hmm. So that might mean that a child goes to a placement with an unrestricted foster family first, and they might be in that home for a night or for a week or for a couple of weeks mm-hmm. until they're able to identify kin. And one thing I'll add about kinship care, too, is that, often that does mean biological family, but it can also be other adults who are in this child's life. It can be a coach. It can be a teacher. I know someone who is a Girl Scout troop leader who ended up being a placement for that child. So the thinking is if this child knows this adult, there is a likelihood that they're going to have a better time adjusting to that home than if they were to go to a stranger's home.
And you mentioned over there are homes that are determined like what they call like emergencies, right? So these would be the people that we just need you at night. We don't have any place to put this particular child. Can you take them short term, right?
Correct.
So as a foster parent, you've got a lot of options, you know, as far as like you could be a short term, you could be a long term. And sometimes the fostering does turn to adoption.
Mm-hmm, true.
Yeah. All right. So there is no publicly available data on how long children wait for placement. What do we know anecdotally about wait periods and where kids are living while they're waiting this placement? Can it be? I mean, you talked about the kinship. It could be a little while, right?
Yeah. And you know, there's a team of folks who will do a search for kin. So, you know, who is related to this child who could be an appropriate placement, and make a bunch of calls and really do the work of finding family for the child. So, you know, I know we don't have the data to say how long kids wait for a home. And certainly some children do, unfortunately, move home to home before they find really the place that they can be until it's determined where their forever home is going to be.
And with the numbers that we mentioned, the numbers of kids that need the placements, there certainly aren't enough foster homes to go around. So what happens when there's a child and you don't have a home immediately? What happens?
Well, I think foster families, that the lack of foster families falls into the category of the lack of other things on Cape Cod, right? Mm-hmm. Other help. And so sometimes the kids end up off Cape. Mm-hmm. DCF does try to place them still in their, you know, environment of Cape Cod or with family, but that isn't always possible. And so the department is always looking for new foster families to come into the system.
Yeah, it's a big decision.
It is.
Yeah. Allie, talk a little bit about that, the process to become a foster parent.
So, you know, my lived experience is being a kinship foster parent, which is sort of a different route than unrestricted foster family. So I can speak from what I understand of the process. Kinship, you really get a call and your loved one's child or, you know, needs a home. And you make a decision about whether you can feasibly make that work and rearrange your life to make that possible. There are exceptions for kinship families, so they don't need to go through the same level of training that unrestricted foster families go through. So an unrestricted foster family, if there or somebody who's out there listening who's interested in fostering, the process looks like you get connected with a local recruiter. We call them our DCF foster parent recruiter, who walks you through this process of, a significant application looking at, who you are, your living environment. There's, of course, background checks involved in that. And then you receive some information about what it looks like to foster and decide if you're going to move forward in the process. From there, there's a home licensing process, which can take some time. They're checking everything from, do you have hot water that's available immediately so that this child can shower? Do they have a bed? Do you have enough space for the number of children that you might have in your home? There are all these requirements, Do you have your smoke detectors? If you have a pool, there are certain requirements around those pieces. So all of these things that, the department has determined are important for ensuring that a child can be safe in a home.
And you mentioned training. So it's not like people might go, gee, I'm interested, but I don't know how to. They help you through that process, right?
Yes. There's a multi-week training. They call it MAP training that you go through with another group of people who are interested in fostering. And that covers all sorts of things that you might need to know, how the system works, what to expect from a child who has gone through a traumatic event, who you can call. There's 24-hour hotline that you can call if you have, something that comes up in your home while you're fostering. Certainly you're not doing this alone.
Yeah. Want to add anything to that, Bev?
No, not really. I mean, I happen to know the MAP trainer. He's on my board, and he trains all across the state. And so sometimes people who have decided that they want to foster go through MAP and then see the difficulty and decide not to do it.
Yeah.
There's a huge financial burden.
Well, also, too, I mean, as you're saying, you go through this training, and you'd rather find that out while you're in the training than after you've placed a child there and disrupt their life all over again, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, I think, part of the goal of MAP training, is to sort of weed out those that really find out that they're not suitable for fostering. But those families that do move forward, they need a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked with Cape Cod Council of Churches, which has a program called Covenant to Care. And I've bought bunk beds. I've bought linen. I've bought clothing. Luckily, now we have Cape Cod Foster Closet where they can go to get clothing, but crib, mm-hmm. Walker, wheelchair for mm-hmm. a child who's handicapped. So there are a whole bunch of needs, and DCF isn't able to really cover a lot of it. Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about what it entails to become a certified as a foster parent, the joys and challenges of fostering children. With us is Allie Garocci. She's executive director of the Cape Cod Foster Closet and a previous kinship foster parent. Beverly Costa-Ciavola is the Cape Cod Neighborhood Support Coalition. We'd love to hear from you. If you have some experience in this area, you'd like to share some of the joys or challenges with us, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, the state does stipulate that foster parents must be over the age of 18, but will they consider somebody in their 60s or 70s? Do you know? I mean, well, grandparents, right?
I've had two grand aunts who have taken in their nephew, niece. Mm-hmm. And they were in their 80s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, as long as the house meets the requirements and DCF or the courts feel like that person has the physical ability to take care of those children, I'm in awe all the time of grandparents who take in their grandchildren, because I've seen them take them all the way from being an infant or, you know, getting them at 5 yeah. or even 11, and it's a lot of work adjusting to having a child in your home when yeah. you haven't had one right. for many, many years.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm just going to put a plug in here for that. Bev, you run the support group, the Grandparents Raising Grandkids support group that I haven't been in a while, but that I'm part of, and I am always amazed at how helpful that is to just hear the other grandparents and their stories. I often walk out of there feeling very lucky about my own situation, because some of them can be very, very difficult, but it's really helpful. I think that's true for support groups across the board, right? That, you know, sometimes you feel like it's, you know, it's just you.
Oh,
it's not.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm fortunate. I have Carrie Bickford, who's a colleague.
Fabulous. She's fabulous.
And a grandparent who's raised two of her mm-hmm. grandchildren, who are now older and out of the nest.
Yeah.
And she runs a support group in Hyannis that my organization and the Family Resource Center co-support.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just helpful to have peers. You know, yeah. one of the things that happens, and you know this, Mindy, you lose your peer group. Yeah. When you take in a grandchild or a niece or a nephew, all of a sudden your friends sort of sometimes disappear. They don't know how to
react. Lifestyle. Yeah.
Different lifestyle. Yeah. They're, you know, you're not available to right. them anymore. And then they're taking the child to school, and they're seeing parents in their 20s and 30s, and they're not feeling any connection. And so having the support groups, from my experience, I've been doing this work for, this is my 18th year, makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's all they, you know, a grandparent or a kinship placement wants is people to talk to who are familiar.
Understand,
with their,
yeah. Let's talk to Jen, who's a foster parent, giving us a call. Hi, Jen.
Hi, how are you?
Great. So tell us about your situation.
Yeah, so we started as unrestricted here on the Cape, and we would take in kids for a night here or there or a couple of nights. And then we moved and went on hold for a little bit. And while we were on hold, my great niece came into care, and she was placed with us as a kinship placement, and we ultimately adopted her.
Wow. And how long ago did you adopt?
Yeah, it'll be 3 years ago in July.
Oh, wow. And then, and so that's probably, Ellie, you can relate to that. This is sort of a root, right? Especially if your parents are gone, that having a kinship foster situation could very easily lead to adoption, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Adoption, guardianship, both options can.
And so, Jen, I'm sure it brings a lot of joy to your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for us doing the kinship route, we had hoped that her birth parents would have the opportunity to better themselves, knowing that she was in a kinship home as opposed to an unrestricted home. And ultimately, her parents just weren't able to pull it together. Mm. So we're very grateful that she gets to continue on here with us.
Right. So, Jen, since you've gone through the process of getting certified, what was that like?
It was a long process. It wasn't long. It was long, but not long. There's a lot of information that you get in those weeks of classes. And even I'm a biological parent as well, but there's so much that you don't know.
Right, exactly. Well, Jen, thanks for calling and sharing your experience with us. We appreciate the call. If you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so kids get placed in foster care through their 18th birthday, right? So there's a range of ages, newborn up to, 18. Are foster families able to indicate what age range they want to foster? You're both nodding your heads.
Yes, they are. They can stipulate, I only want a teenager, or I only want to take in infants. And the department tries to honor that request, though sometimes they may get a call saying, I know you want an infant, but we have a four-year-old toddler that could really use, a placement. So, but absolutely. I mean, you're opening up your home and your life, so being able to at least stipulate, I want this age group. Maybe it's because you have biological children that are in that age group and you want them to be able to, bond together.
Right. And I'm also thinking, I would imagine placing teenagers would be tough. And it's been many years since we focused in on that age group talking about foster care. But I remember one time there was one woman on the Cape who was taking in teenage girls. And we all know one guy who takes in the teenage boys, right? And it's really hard to find homes that will take teenagers.
Very difficult. Very difficult to find homes on Cape Ann Islands, too. And I think, as we were talking about earlier, when a child is removed from their home, they don't just lose their home. If they end up having to go off Cape or go off of Nantucket or go off of Martha's Vineyard, we're talking about them losing their friend group, losing connection to their after-school activities, their friends, maybe extended family who aren't able to take them in. And that's a whole other level of loss. Certainly, we want to do whatever we can to keep kids in their home community, and there is a huge need for there to be more families on Cape in general, and certainly for families who are interested in taking teenagers.
Yeah, and of course you're mentioning loss of friends, but this also, when you think of the trauma that these kids go through, this the need of the medical and behavioral health supports, which are just in themselves hard to find. But as you mentioned earlier, being here, that's a really tough area for folks who are looking for behavioral health supports for their kids.
And COVID really changed the game too, because a lot of that couldn't be in person. So, it was telehealth became a big thing. But there's not enough psychiatrists, child psychologists, clinicians who deal specifically with children. We need as many more of those as we do foster families. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really hard to find someone that can work with that child.
Right.
And luckily we have some schools who have brought in therapists for children, and so they can have their session right there at the school, which helps that placement parent foster parent because they don't have to drive, you know, pick up the kid from school and drive them to another location.
Well, I'm also thinking if you have kids being placed off Cape from the Cape and Islands, reunification, I would think, was difficult because, you know, these parents who are here and then they have to travel to wherever, how far away the children are placed to see them or, you know, vice versa. I mean, that seems like it makes the process that much harder.
It's a big ask of social workers. It's a big ask of these children who often have to, you know, get pulled out of school or pulled out of daycare to do visits. And visitation is so important, right?
Right.
It's a big ask for parents who may be struggling with transportation just on the Cape or, you know, doing what they need to do to get through the day and work to get their children back. So that it is tough when kids go off Cape. And it's tough when kids get even placed on Cape if they're an island family. You know, now you're talking about having to take a boat to see to see your children, maybe the hours that you're supposed to be working. Really hard.
A lot going on here. Somebody you know is on the phone. Allie Sharon, the founder of Cape Cod Foster Closet, is calling in. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great.
So tell us about founding the Cape Cod Foster Closet.
Well, my husband and I started fostering in 2017, and we are in the older age group that it's definitely possible for people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s to foster, and we found it really so meaningful. But we, after a few years, had the experience of having children arrive with nothing, and we decided to start the closet because we knew we weren't going to be able to foster indefinitely. And so we wanted to find a way to support other foster families. And we knew for sure that it does affect your life in all kinds of ways. But the hardest part is when a child or a group of children may arrive in the evening, late in the evening, and they don't have anything with them. So I wanted to have a way to get clothing and other items like outfits for school for the next day or diapers to the families within same day or the very next morning. So that's how we started. And then it just grew from there as we saw more and more needs of especially the opportunities to meet other people in similar situations. You know, I think as Bev mentioned, it can be isolating and your friend groups kind of fall away because you're not as available. So we created special events for families to get together where the kids are doing something fun and the adults get to find out that they're not in this alone and other people are going through the same sorts of situations. So that's kind of where it started.
Yeah. You know, Sharon, you just mentioned something too that I think is important. You mentioned taking in older kids and teenagers, as we know, can be tough and a challenge, but I almost feel like it's like the grandparents raising grandkids. It's not the same experience as when, you know, you were raising your own kids. You're young. You're like, I'm a new parent. What am I doing? You have a little bit more wisdom, right? You've learned how to choose your battles. And I think it might be a much more rewarding experience for both the teen and the foster parent if it is a little bit of an older age, 60s, 70s, 80s, as you're mentioning.
Yeah, I think there's definite benefits, but then there's also like the technology nowadays is so different from years and years ago. And we find a lot of our grandparents especially are having trouble navigating all of that and learning, what limits to set or just how to use the different sources of technology. So there are definite benefits as well as drawbacks.
Yeah, everything's got its pros and cons, right?
right.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for calling, and thanks for starting the Cape Cod Foster Closet. It's a very important need. Appreciate you calling. Thanks for being here.
Well, we really appreciate you helping to create awareness, so thank you.
Thanks. We've got an email from a listener from family that says, I've been a foster parent for 19 years and became a foster parent to help children live in a safe home for as long as they needed to. My goal was not adoption, although I have adopted 3 kids. There's a great need for foster homes on the Cape. Homes that take teens are always in demand. People hear stories about teens and are afraid to take them. I've had many teens, and they've been amazing. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. If you'd like to share your experience, we'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org, or give us a call at 866-999-4626, and we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about foster families this morning with Ali Garochi, Executive Director of the Cape Cod Foster Closet and a previous kinship foster parent, and Beverly Costa-Ciavola from the Cape Cod Neighborhood Support Coalition. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. One of the things we see with some of the children is special needs, right? It could be a whole range of things. And Bev, I know you see this with the grandparents raising grandchildren, but we also see it in the foster families as well. What kinds of supports and help is there for those families?
Limited.
Limited, yeah.
It can be a real challenge. I have a grandparent group, as you mentioned, Mindy, and I have had a grandparent that's been part of the group for many, many years, who was a special needs foster parent. And over the time that she was fostering, that was what she took in, mostly infants who were very, very ill and sometimes not expected to live, children with physical disabilities, lots of children with psychological and mental disabilities, a lot of times due either to the abuse that they suffered or watching their adult parents deal with their drug addiction. Mm-hmm. So there's not enough supports around special needs for those placements. Frankly, I don't know that I don't know, maybe you do, Allie, whether a foster family gets more money, I would imagine, for mm-hmm. a family that for a child who has special needs, because you do have a range of costs.
I would think most of the kids get their health insurance paid, right? They'd get that kind of support, at least for medical.
Yep.
And
all children are on MassHealth who are in foster care. And we should say, generally speaking, if you are fostering, there is a base level stipend, and it's depends on the number of children and the age of children. So there is financial support for parents who are fostering, and there is the ability to request additional support if you have a child that has special needs and requires extra stuff, extra appointments, extra things. The department also has, people who work for them that specialized in working with children who have additional needs or liaising with the school to provide some support around that.
I just wonder, there's a stereotype that we sometimes see in the movies and stuff that they're doing it for the money. None of these foster parents are doing it for the money.
Goodness,
no. As you said, baseline, right?
Baseline.
It's not a lot of money. And
yes, exactly. That's right. To be able to afford to feed this child, to ideally put them in an after-school activity. And, we talk a lot about the lack of support, and I think it is important to lift up that there are gaps, certainly, and also that there is support. There's the stipend for the foster families. There's certainly our organization, which is here to support those basic necessities with clothing. And as Sharon mentioned, we also do a series of free family fun events, which is really about getting families together, making memories, doing something in different parts around the Cape, and providing an opportunity for both the children and the caregivers to interact with each other.
Again, it goes back to that whole connection thing, right?
That's right.
Not only are the foster parents, meeting other foster parents, but the kids are going, hey, I'm not the only one, right? They make friendships through this, right?
That's right. Yeah, and you don't have to explain, who's this person to you, or mm-hmm. you call them this and you don't call them that. No, we're just here. We're being kids. We're being families making memories together. If we have that deeper, if the kids or the caregivers have that deeper level conversation to say, oh, hey, this is something I'm struggling with, or, I'm having a hard time finding a psychologist for my child. What tips mm-hmm. do you have? Fantastic. But we also think it's just important to normalize mm-hmm. that there is no one definition of family.
That's right.
And that what's important is that, we're together, we're having fun, we love on each other, and we're making memories in this beautiful place that we happen to live.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the abuse side of things, but neglect is another area, right?
That's right. And, my understanding from the national data is that neglect is the most common cause for involvement with child welfare. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the subject of today's conversation is foster care. So we're talking about children who are removed from their home. By and large, most families that are involved with the child welfare system, the children remain in their home. Mm-hmm. But there are these protective concerns, so that they don't rise to the level of, the state deciding that the children need to be removed. But neglect is really complicated, and disentangling what neglect means from poverty, because those are two different things, I think is really challenging to understand as an outside person, and also to try to figure out how to support a family through that so that they're able to meet their child's basic needs.
Right. And we should say, just because DCF is involved doesn't mean they're losing their children, right?
That's right.
DCF also does a great work in helping families stay together.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. All right. So as some people become foster parents, they might have this long-term goal of being able to adopt, even though, as mentioned, reunification is always number one. But talk about this process. I mean, how are children identified as being available for adoption? Do either of you know the answer to that?
Well, I know in the case of the grandparents in my group who have adopted their grandchildren, the process is lengthy, just like it is to become a foster parent. They have to have both biological parents, if they are able, to sign off and give up their parental rights, which can be really hard.
Yeah.
And for the grandparent who is thinking of adopting, having their adult child have to forego being the parent is hard to fathom, but mm-hmm. That's one of the first steps, is the child needs to be able to not be connected in that way to their parents,
so
their biological.
And I would imagine if it's not the grandparents adopting, but a foster family, maybe it's the court system. Somehow the parental rights have to be terminated,
That's
correct?
Right. Yeah. The parents can choose to sign, or they can choose to go through a trial to decide if their parental rights are terminated or kept. And when things are moving in that direction, so they say, first goal is reunification, but if the goal maybe changes to adoption, they do what's what I think it's called concurrent planning. So mm-hmm. their social workers are working towards reunification, and their social workers who are working towards adoption. So that's sort of like keeping both options open. We're not sure how this is going to go, but we're starting to move towards what needs to be done towards adoption, and we're continuing to try to support parents if they are able to reunify.
So how does the interaction between families and DCF change once a child is adopted? Once they're adopted, is DCF like done? Yeah.
For the most part, yeah. I do have one set of grandparents who have both of their grandchildren are special needs, and so they have been able to get a little bit of ongoing support from DCF over the mm-hmm. time, but there's nothing formally in place. One of the things that's, kids who are in foster care get free education at the age of 18. Is that mm-hmm. correct, Allie? Yeah.
In state, right?
Yeah. And so that wasn't recognized for kinship at first. Mm. And so that was something that we had to all we're very fortunate. Massachusetts has the Commission for Grandparents Raising Grandchildren, mm-hmm. and they've been wonderful at sort of supporting legislation out there to help grandparents.
And that's when they're adopted, right?
Yes.
So what about the grandparents raising grandkids? When are they going to get the free college tuition in state?
So So now they have gotten the right to have college education, and as we know, all the public colleges now,
yeah,
the community colleges, free.
Yeah.
But that makes the list of people that the kids that want to go to college increase. So some of the community colleges may have trouble accommodating that number of students. But
yeah,
the other thing that grandparents are able to get is it's not a stipend, but the Department of Transitional Assistance has a fund for kinship, and it's not contingent on the kinship person's money,
income,
what they
mm-hmm.
have for income, which is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so every grandparent, every kinship, no question, they are eligible for that. But I have had kinship placements who have said, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to take that money. And I tell them, take that money, put mm-hmm. it away for college,
right,
put it away for that child to have their first car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know what expenses are going to be down the road. Take, mm-hmm. you know, take what you are offered. One of the things that a long time ago happened with a lot of the grandparents is that DCF felt like, now the kids are safe, so we can terminate this relationship with DCF, and the grandparents wouldn't always know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been told, but you don't always hear what you're being told, right?
Yeah.
So they would then find out they don't have childcare voucher, they don't have clothing allowance, and so I worked with the then director, Steve Ryan, to have the social workers really look at keeping that kinship open for a little bit longer until the grandparents really understand and can pick up those costs.
All right. Let's talk to Colleen, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, Mindy.
Do you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Yeah.
I've adopted through DCF, so I just wanted to contribute to the conversation in terms of...
Tell us about your experience. Yeah.
Yeah, we've adopted three children, and we've always had great support through our worker at DCF. And I know someone early on the show was speaking about the licensing process, and I agree with her that it was long and short at the same time. And but, you know, they're pretty upfront about the process. It takes about a year, and that was true just because there's a lot of effort on both sides to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of good training involved, which more training than I had when I had my biological child.
Yeah.
So it's helpful. And the support in the community on the Cape is great. Like, we participate in a lot of the events that the Foster Closet puts on, which we love having a chance to have our kids around other families that look like ours and have similar origin stories. It's a really great experience for them to see that.
Yeah. So, Colleen, did you foster the kids first before you adopted them?
Yeah, technically any placement is a foster at first until the rights are terminated and the goal, you know, like the goal is adoption. And then they have to live with you for 6 months before you can start the process with the court. And that's just to make sure everything is still good on both sides and that it's still working for everyone and feels like the right placement.
Right. Right, so a good experience all around for you. You're recommending it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great, and it doesn't have to lead to adoption to be great. You know, fostering is great as well. It's just what our situation has been so far have led to adoption. So,
yeah. Colleen, thank you for sharing. Appreciate that. We'd love to hear these stories. Yeah. Thank you for calling in. Bev, another question I have is these kids in foster care, what happens when they age out?
That can be complicated too. I'm pretty sure that DCF now has some supports for them up to the age of 21,
mm-hmm.
Which is very helpful. But a lot of times you're 18, you need to leave this foster placement.
Yeah.
You know, the foster family may feel like they can't support that child anymore. what for whatever reason. And so it can be challenging for a young person to find a place to live while they attend college or get some work training. But the support is limited, but it is there. And that's relatively new because it used to be that you're 18, you're aged out, bye.
And then, of course, for kids with special needs, they're like to 22, I think. Is it 22 where they get services, right? 22. But the same thing, right? Once they hit 22, all those services that they got all through school and, you know, are gone.
Yeah, I think the idea with the supports, which I believe it's actually to 24 for DCF, if, you know, if at 18 the child decides to sort of...
they can sign themselves out.
Sign themselves. Yeah, they can sign themselves out or they can sign themselves in. And then they get these ongoing supports. So a social worker meets with them. They are eligible for free college. There are other organizations across the state that provide some support. So there's an organization called Rise Above that does gift bags or goodie bags that get sent with your basics that you might, you know, need. And I think the idea is, you know, you support this young adult for a few years until they can get their feet under them, hopefully, acknowledging that maybe they haven't had that, you know, they haven't had that parental figure or that, that adult that's been consistent with them to help them figure out how to be in the world as a young person.
Yeah. And for some of these families, you know, the foster child may age out, move away, get on with their life. They still stay in contact, right? I mean, you hear many stories of these kids having lifelong relationships with these families.
Absolutely. Aging out and still having that relationship, having been in someone's home for a period of time and reunifying and still having that relationship, I think, you know, it runs the whole gamut. But making that choice to foster and take a child into your home is huge. And the impact, you have to know that the impact that you make on that life, you may not see where it leads, but it can be, you know, massive.
Life-changing.
Life-changing.
All right. So what makes a good foster parent? What are your thoughts on who's a good foster parent?
And I think anyone can be a good foster parent, regardless of your age. I think, you know, the first thing is that you have to have a desire to help children and know that there's going to be challenges down the road.
There are with any child.
Exactly, exactly. you know, you don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to know all the answers because there is, training. But I think anyone who has that desire really should look into it. You may end up getting a placement that changes your life as well as the life of that child.
Yeah. Can you do, I mean, do they meet the child first or is it a, no, you, no, it's a, and so, and the children certainly don't have any input into where they're going, right?
No, I mean, typically the, you know, social worker is going to call the foster parent and say, we have this child coming into care, or we have this child who needs to move homes, and provide some information about them. You know, here's some of their history, here's some things we want you to know, here's their, here's their age, you know, those pieces of information, and there can be a dialogue about whether it's going to be the right fit or not, but they don't usually have an opportunity
and
to meet.
I'm sure there are situations where the foster situation doesn't work out with either the foster parent or the child, and they don't force that, right? Something doesn't work out, they find another home. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The part of the Foster Parent Bill of Rights is that foster parents have the ability to say, this is not working out, and we need to find a better place or a more appropriate place for this child.
Just got a little over a minute left. Just what would you say to somebody who's saying, maybe I might think I might like to check that out?
Well, I would say contact my organization or Cape Cod Foster Closet, and maybe we could set up a phone call with a foster family so that you can get a sense of what goes on in a foster home. And just go on the internet. There's tons of information on the internet too. Call your local DCF office and ask them, what does it entail? That would be
Check out the training, right?
Check out the training. Absolutely. It doesn't hurt. And, you know, if you've been thinking about it, now is the time. We have so many kids on Cape and Islands in our community who need a home. And while the department is moving towards kinship, we always will need unrestricted foster homes.
Right. Allie Garocci is Executive Director of the Cape Cod Foster Closet and a previous kinship foster parent. Beverly Costa Ciavola is from the Cape Cod Neighborhood Support Coalition. And we're going to post links to their organizations at our website. Also, with information on how to become a foster parent, capeandislands.org. Thank you both. Thanks for the work that you do.
Thank you, Mindy, for having us.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
With production assistance from Dan Tridle and Elsa Partan. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.